Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
It's Christopher Eubanks. It's Noah Rubin. It's Mikecation. We are indoors at the Cary Tennis Park, and you won today. Congratulations. Noah didn't. I'm sorry. Let me make sure that I'm clear. Christopher Eubanks wins today. Noah did not play.
Well, the thing is, Noah rarely does. I thought that's what people have to kind of understand about
play
him,
or just, win. Because I think both are true.
I think the guy's just kind of, it's a bit all over the place from time to time.
Sure.
And even when he's technically playing, I don't think he's really playing. I don't think he's mentally there. I think his mind kind of wanders to other things, you know. And
where do you think it goes?
God only knows.
Yeah.
God only knows. You know, we're coming off of this election season. I know he's probably thinking about
it. It was a late September evening. 7-6 in the third.
This tragic election season. So he's probably, thoughts and prayers go out to he and all of his loved ones that he lost to those.
Wow. For Trump, I missed this.
Wow.
Please.
Okay.
No, not you. Some of your friends that you lost because they might have.
Yeah, that happened.
So, you know, thoughts and prayers to you and your loved ones.
Thank you. How about you?
No, I'm pretty good. Yeah. You know, I'm not really that close to the 12 percenters.
Christopher still has more elections to go here in the next 2 months.
Gotta get Georgia. Doesn't mean anything if you don't get these two Senate seats. So
I really didn't think we were gonna go politics here, but I appreciate that.
Let's go back. So Noah,
yeah,
that back to him. Mm-hmm. He's just the guy. Just, you know, I would have thought being back in the state of North Carolina,
yeah,
place that he played so well for all of, you know, 3 months,
yeah,
in college, he would have thought, you know, he would have, you know, really been able to muster up some of that great energy he had at the ACC tournament years ago, and struggled a little bit today.
Wait a minute. Yesterday. Let's talk about just the end of that season. Mm-hmm. What happened? The final match of the year.
Well, you know, I mean, Noah was on a roll. I remember just like it was yesterday.
Yes.
Baylor, Texas. I'm sorry, Waco, Texas University of Baylor versus Baylor University.
I think it's
either
BU.
Way.
Yeah.
Guy is on an absolute roll.
Yeah.
You know, he's playing, you know, what was one of the best players in college tennis at the time.
Yeah.
And Ryan Shane, and he's cruising. He's up 6-1, 5-3, serving for the match. You know, everything is, you know, going exactly how it should, and the match gets moved indoors. No biggie.
No biggie.
It just beat Ryan Shane indoors, you know, a few weeks earlier. Uh-huh. He would have seen these fortunes turning. And then he gets in there, and I don't know if he just, you know, in that rain delay, if he started to get a little bit tight, if his mind started to wander other places. Like, he's been planning this the BTR tour for years, so maybe that's where his mom's going. I win this match. I'm in the U.S. Open. I can then start my own tour. Who knows?
Mm.
But he goes in the match, and then the things turn drastically.
Yeah.
Ryan Shane comes back, catches fire, gets on a roll, and then goes on to become an NCAA champion. And Noah Rubin, you know, goes on to become CEO of Behind the Racket. So, you know, careers turn, you know, drastically different paths.
This match has become a game of telephone at this point. None of those facts are true. Not one of those facts are true. We went inside at like 5-0 in the first set.
Okay. Well, the thing is, they didn't know that before you said that. I think my story was a bit better, but you can go ahead and tell the truth.
Chris, what we were planning on doing, you're the first person that got to sit down with us, which is truly an honor for you, clearly.
Well, the thing is, it would be more of an honor if Noah weren't here.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Anytime I sit here and I get to talk with you, it's a great day.
The idea was to ask you a couple of fun questions, but you just went Chappelle on us and just did a little monologue, and I appreciate that. I respect it very much. But here was, we were going to do a little fun in a 5-minute interview. You've taken care of that aspect. Here's the actual question. You are chairman, commissioner of tennis. What are you doing to help improve the quality of challenger level tennis?
This is such a Noah Rubin question. My goodness.
This one actually is me.
Is it you?
Really? Yeah, because here's what I want to gauge as an introduction to
help.
This. I want to just gauge where players are at, how they think the tour can help improve the quality of life for a man like yourself.
Quick story, and this is actually a compliment to Chris.
Okay.
But I don't know the truth of it yet. I have to figure it out. He said verbatim that when I saw that money will be distributed to the latter rounds of tournaments, I just have to win more matches. Pretty impressive, I have to say. I don't know if I believe it yet, but that is coming from him. So I don't know if he's actually thought about this question before.
And Dmitry Popko, as we say that, has slipped.
I think matches are about to be done indoors because the courts are clearly wet behind the court. That's something that they were debating a few minutes ago, and now Popko went down.
Answer the question. One thing, come on.
Well, Mike asked the question. You said something. I don't know why you started talking because I was talking to Mike. So, Mike, you were going again.
If you could pick one thing that would help improve the quality of life that you've experienced at the challenger level, what would it be?
I genuinely, honestly don't know. I don't have an answer for you. And that's not me being evasive. It's just me not knowing. Obviously, the solution obviously would be more prize money. Everybody wants more prize money than challengers. However, the way that I look at it, and I'm into my third year on tour in a couple months.
Yeah.
And I've been in the challengers for the most of it.
Yeah.
Pretty much all of it. I don't know. I just look at the challengers as just something you just have to get through. Like, it's just something that, you know, all of the players are sitting at top 10, you know, in top 20 and top 50. Like, some even occasionally have to go back to the challengers. But it's just a stepping stone to try to get to where you really, really want to be. I don't really have an answer on how to better this system. Besides, obviously, you know, more prize money would be great. More prize money would help. But at the same time, you know, this is something that I hard as I'm working, I want to be able to get myself to the Grand Slam, the Masters 1000, 250s, 500s, and that's where I want to see my career really take off. So, I mean, I think for me, one of my biggest problems, I play a lot better at tour events and bigger events just because a little bit more energy, a little bit more excitement. I don't really know if that's something that can be fixed from a CEO of the Challenger Tours like standpoint. What could be fixed to try to bring more excitement, more fanfare?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something that they have the control over. The way I just look at the challengers is something you just gotta go through it. You know, there are gonna be some sites that aren't gonna be as nice as City Open and as Atlanta and as, you know, Winston-Salem, but you gotta make the best of it and you gotta try to go out there and give it your all so you can get out of it as quick as possible. So that's just kind of the mentality. I don't really look at it as like what needs to be better. I just like, all right, I need to hurry up and win some matches so I can try to get out of this thing.
Or just create your own tour.
You could create your own tour. You know, that tends to be, you know, another way out. You know, instead of, you know, just hunkering down and working. And
yeah, because these 250s and 500s are so much better.
And digging it. I mean, if anyone from the ATP is listening, I love your 250s and 500s. I have no problem against them.
These are all ATP events, but don't worry about it.
I don't know what Noah's talking about. The 250s and 500s are great. So if there are any wild cards that pop up, go ahead and send them my way and don't think about Noah Rubin.
I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah,
that's definitely not going to be a problem.
Do think about me consciously and then say, no, thank you.
Last year, when unfortunately for you, you lost to the little fella here.
Yeah, that was when his mind was still on tennis.
Yeah,
you
know,
played a great
was.
Match.
It looked like you were going to hit him in the post-match handshake. Have you ever actually hit him?
Yes, please enlighten us.
No, I've not.
Okay,
I've never.
There's still time.
I've never actually, you know.
Have you done anything before?
No. I think
okay.
I just keep.
Interesting.
My parents have always told me to keep my hands to myself, so I just kind of.
Okay.
That's what I kind of do. Yeah.
Interesting.
And,
that's what I've always thought.
Can you make eye contact with me right now, please?
Well, I mean, it seems a bit odd that you would be asking me. Does Jamie know that you're like this? Does you want me to, you know, me to look you deep into your eyes? It seems
you're avoiding the situation right now.
I appreciate this.
Can you look
very
up, please?
Much. Christopher, thank you so much for joining us. It's good to talk to you, and congratulations on it's an unfortunate walkover win over Michael Moe, but you're into the, I guess it's quarterfinals again.
Quarterfinals.
This whole 32 draw again, I kind of like that.
It's quite refreshing.
Yeah, it really is. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Second on the podcast this week, the man who owns a bus, Hunter Reese.
The unnamed bus.
The unnamed. Yeah,
walk us through this process, because it's all of a sudden there's just a bus on your Instagram. And, you know, as somebody who lived there's on a bus for a couple of years, you know, with the production crew, I have questions. So walk us through this whole bus.
Okay, so the whole process, it's been a while, a long time coming, but I got really into, like, the van life, like, converting a Sprinter van, that kind of thing. And when COVID happened, I got super into it. Like, I think everyone got into something.
Right.
So I was, like, watching YouTube and, Instagram, everything. Started looking at vans, and they're pretty expensive. Like, to get one even kind of cheap, it'll have a ton of miles. It's all beat up. And I didn't want to mess with that because I don't know a lot about cars. So.
Yeah.
So I kind of gave up on it. It was like, all right, maybe one day when I have money, I can do it.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of the summer, basically someone contacted me and was like, hey, I know you're into this. There's a bus for sale. It's partially renovated. Are you interested? So I went and checked it out. It had 30,000 miles, which is like brand new for the, for the engine. It's a 1995 bus, and it wasn't a full length bus. So like, it's not so intimidating that I'm, you know, driving around a 40-foot vehicle or anything. So I checked it out a couple times, had it looked at, and bought it. And now I'm converting it into a tiny home.
We have to, wait, tell them the fact that you told me about this. This I've never
heard
this before.
Oh, yeah, this is wild, right? So the engine will go for like over 1,000,000 miles.
Right.
And like that, yeah. Like
I told Noah that.
Yeah, I told Noah, and he was like, I said, like, seriously, and, like, that's not an exaggeration. Probably. Yeah, no. It's not like, oh,
it's
yeah, it'll go for 1,000,000 miles. Like,
at 20,000, you get a new car, I thought.
Again, I
the car outside has 150.
As somebody who lived on a bus for a couple of years, I did learn some of those bus facts. So, it's fascinating.
So those diesel engines, they're just built forever.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Why? To use the old Seinfeld joke here, why don't just they make every engine out of it? You know, I mean, like, seriously.
It's true, though.
Well, I can't imagine it'll pass too many emission tests nowadays.
Fair.
But.
So the plan is then to live in it?
Potentially.
Potentially.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, while I'm playing tennis, I won't.
Okay.
And people always ask, you know, are you going to take a tournament? It's like, no. I mean, they pay for the hotel. It's inconvenient. Like, if I'm going from here to California, what am I going to do with it? You know, like, I'm going down to Orlando, and then if I decide to play Brazil, what am I going to do with a bus sitting in Florida?
There is, I will say, there is a chair, a lines person who typically does work here in the Southeast who drives around and lives in a VW van. Like, that's just the way he wanted to live.
So that's like, I think that's really cool, and it's something I'd be interested in, but not probably not while I'm playing tennis. I just think it's not super feasible.
It's for the hiking lifestyle.
But but like to take some trips in it.
Yeah.
I want to do that. And then after I'm done and like whatever chapter is next in life,
if
I'm a little bit more stable than, or like, you know, stationary, then yeah, I could live out of a bus.
Can you let Mike and I paint
just my daughter.
Of it?
Just my daughter. She can
just finger paint it.
She's beyond finger paints now. Trust me.
Turn it loose with some spray paint. We'll call it a day.
All right. So the big question that we're trying to ask everybody today, if you're a commissioner of tennis, how do you improve life for players at the lower levels, be it ITF on the women's side, challengers and futures for the men?
I think I try to make it a little more sustainable. The lifestyle a little more sustainable. I think the first thing you could do is look at the distribution of the prize money. I think, you know, if you win, especially if you're looking at the singles draw, if you win the singles, I don't know what it is here, but, you know, I think...
Seven?
Is it?
Seven. That's seven, probably seven, right. Eight, something like that.
Yeah.
So if you cut that down to four, whatever, you know, if you cut everything back a little bit and kind of distribute it a little bit more evenly, so you're making, you know, 1,500 for losing first round, like that's still, and if you get your hotel, you know, five nights, you can start to put a little bit of that money away or reinvest that in yourself. And I think that right away makes this life a little bit more sustainable, where you don't feel like, you know, there's constantly this timeline of, if I don't get out in 2 years, if I'm not playing the tour in 2 years, then, you know, I'm leaving tennis $50,000 in debt or whatever it might be. Or just thinking, you know, week to week, how am I going to do it?
Yeah.
So I think that would be the first thing I would do, is look at redistributing the prize money, to make it to where people aren't thinking about the money every week.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
We got Ty Kwiatkowski here. You know, we asked you to do this podcast and the eyebrows went down. The typical Ty eyebrows. That's when you think really, really hard about what's going to take place and then the smile comes out. But now you're trying to be really serious and I hope it doesn't affect the podcast. How are you feeling right now?
It's just good to be here, my friend.
I couldn't
imagine being anywhere else, you know? Just happy to be here.
So just to put it in perspective, we did a podcast with you and you guys were together. In Indian Wells, that was right at the start of this whole mess.
Times were good.
Life okay? Anything changed for you?
Not much. I have a girlfriend now.
How's that going for you?
It's good. Yeah, she hasn't killed me or dumped me. So
okay.
These are
there's still time.
Directions.
Still time.
Yeah, plenty of time. Plenty of time.
I really thought Cara Mountain was when she was going to push you off.
Yeah. She had ample opportunities, so mm-hmm. I don't know if she got nervous.
Yeah. I mean, we all get tight from time to time, you know?
I mean, it's a big deal, homicide.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends on where you're at.
And how many times you've done it.
Yeah.
Clearly not a pro.
Are you happy to be back? I mean, how are you approaching it?
Actually, for the first few tournaments, I wasn't totally prepared and excited to play. I didn't use my time off as wisely as I should have, in terms of, you know, staying fit and working on things I needed to. And I actually came into U.S. Open and French Open with some pain, but then I took the last month and a half. I reset. I worked really hard in fitness, and I showed up to Cary really excited to play and lost a tough one yesterday, but. Starting to feel physically good again, even though my game hasn't quite followed yet.
It's been my fault, Ty. I want to say that first off before I ask this question. It's been entirely my fault.
Wow, this is going to be good.
But when we do go play poker together, how much of my money are you going to take?
I played a decent amount of poker during quarantine, and my skills have improved pretty good. And, I mean, honestly, I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. I'm a pretty competitive person, so to play poker and it not be something that's bad for my career, like it's not, you know, skiing, I can't shatter my, you know,
true.
Leg or something like that, and keeps the mind fresh.
Fresh, huh?
In general, I feel like it's a pretty good thing for me, and I don't know.
He's being so political right now.
I do look forward to playing with Mike Cation live on the tables, because he would definitely beat me online.
Verbatim, he's like player X, where he just wants to see the soul removed from the player.
I mean, I'm a competitive guy.
When I'm at the table,
like,
yeah, right.
I want to felt other players.
Yes.
Like seeing them with no chips in front of them and them like staring at their empty wallet. Like,
yes.
Like they have to call their wife.
Right.
No. Not like, oh my God, I don't have any life savings yet left. But like, you know, you play to win the game.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Are we playing any high stakes yet? Is that happening?
Not high stakes, no. But I have played live a few times since COVID with, you know, at a casinos with masks and stuff like that. And it's been good. It's been fun.
Do you mind me asking what's the highest you've played?
In Charlottesville, we have a couple really cool home games where we've played 5-10 no limit a few times.
Yeah.
And I played once on a Twitch stream at home in Jacksonville, and that was a 2-5 deep stack game. So that was cool.
Really? It was, what's
Twitch.
It called? Best bet?
Best bet, yeah.
I we've texted enough. Why you didn't call me? I'm a little disappointed.
I honestly was a little nervous to be felted on the stream.
Yes.
Because then it's proof that I'm a bad player and also everyone can see my cards.
I get it.
So But I actually played well that night, so I'll send you the clip.
Okay. I will absolutely watch it. I will watch it much more than I'd like to watch Noah Rubin ever play tennis.
I agree.
Yeah, same.
So the big question, the serious question we're asking, if you're commissioner of tennis and you have the opportunity to improve the quality of life at the challenger level, how do you do that?
Well, like we just said off the mic, obviously, you know, I'm sure other people have said 10, 20 different things that we could change and make it better. But at the end of the day, like, the sport is so far away from making it, you know, a decent life for these challenger guys that it's hard to just put it in one or two, you know. And I'm a total realist. Like, I understand the reasons why we can't have all the things that we talk about, you know. Why can't we have 10,000 people in the, okay, 10,000, but why can't we have 2,000 people watching? Why can't we sell tickets? Why can't we have, you know, more streams and bring in more revenue and with more revenue, pay the players better, you know, have higher quality officials, higher quality tennis centers, higher quality courts and everything that goes along with that. And it just starts with, there's so little revenue in the sport itself that it can't trickle down to, you know, the second level of tennis, the Challenger Tour. So, I mean, I could tell you, yeah, I mean, I wish we had all these things, but at the end of the day, it all comes down to money, and, you know, there's just not a lot coming in, especially during COVID, but even before COVID, you know, we can sit on all day and talk about things that we need to get better, but at the end of the day, we got to figure out a way to bring in money for the sport, and that's either making it more exciting or, you know, having the ATP and the people at the top, you know, renegotiate these deals for us, because I do think there is interest in the sport, especially in Europe, Asia, and, you know, a small percentage of America. But, you know, the fact that people only really knows what the slams are is, it just shows, you know. And I think I read a stat that ESPN is dropping all ATP events next year outside of the slams. I mean, yep. They'd rather show the Little League World Series than Indian Wells Masters. And I think that, I mean, that's...
I mean, those kids are fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I love Little League World Series, but, you know, it's kind of crazy that, like...
Like, cornhole comes on before tennis.
Yeah. The fifth and sixth biggest tournaments in the sport can't even get on, you know, our one sports channel in America, so...
You rose your hand. I didn't know if you were going to ask another question.
I wanted to stop it after that. I thought he was going to stop it, and then he went on another 2 minutes after that. Because I got it. It was like, that's a perfect stop, and then he kept going.
Hey, you can cut it.
No, we won't cut it. Thank you, Ty.
Cool. Thanks.
Mr. Gabashvili.
So you have had a hell of a career, but I wanted to ask you, as we kind of bullshit a little bit here, the Almagro ball boy situation. I don't know that has anybody ever asked you about your what you saw?
Were playing the match? Yes.
What you saw? Did you?
I didn't see it because it was I don't remember. I think it was middle of the match.
Okay.
It was just fell down because. You know, behind the court, you have curtains when it rains.
Yeah.
So the guy just smashed down.
Wait, but I didn't see
love in the third, yeah.
I didn't see everybody start laughing, and then I'm looking, and Almagro went there. What's happened? Everything okay? But we were so tense, so I didn't see the moment exactly.
So you've seen it since, I'm sure, millions of times.
Yes, not millions. I saw one or two, but, I mean, it happens, you know. It just cut on the camera, but... So many matches it happens.
Yeah.
So it's just on my tour I had many.
Yeah.
Even in challenger level, like more funnier things. You know, but this one you have in the camera. That's why.
Right.
It is like, wow.
You're a big man, sometimes scary, but people don't know. You're the MVP in World Team Tennis. You're a team player. I actually really like talking to you.
Yes. I love teams.
Yeah. So where does this come from? Where are you hiding it? Are you? You want? I want people to know the real Gabashvili.
Well, throughout my career, you know, my biggest issue was to be professionalism. You know, when I was alone, I couldn't force myself to wake up, do the diet, practice well. You know, Of course, you said I have a hell of a career, but I could play much better because I know how could I play. I know my game, but I couldn't achieve that throughout the year. You know, I would compete same level without ups and downs. So what was happening that when I was getting some goal, I was so happy, then I was wasting it away. So this was the problem that behind me I had coach, yes, but it was one trustee. But when I'm in the team, I feel like I'm responsible for somebody else, not for myself. That's why I just give my best. When I'm alone, you know, it is difficult to be responsible against yourself. You know, many people go to casino, they spend all money, you know, and they're nuts, but they love it and they are not responsible against themselves. So I think I had a huge problem doing this. But when I'm on the court for the team, I know that my match is very important, not because I have to win, because other ones will be happy also. So that's where I give everything what I have.
Has that
and no fear, you know? I have no fear because behind me is whole of the team.
Right.
So it's much easier.
Has it changed for you individually with a family and a child? Has that changed your perspective at all?
No. It's just who I am, you know?
Okay.
It's just my mentality. It's yeah. just who I am.
But you have a child now. Simple. I don't want to take care of a child.
No.
I'm not ready for that.
No. I do have child. I have kids, but you know, when I'm on the court alone, I just fight for myself, no? And yes, of course, you are responsible. But when somebody's cheering for you and you know that they want you to win because for them it's going to be also good.
Yeah.
Then, you know, my balls are stronger and I play better tennis.
So on the serious note, you know, we said it, you've been at every level, you've been at the top of the sport. If you had a magical wand and you can change one thing on the Challenger Tour, what would it be?
I mean, I would
say... I like
say
the smile.
make the players play better, you know? Because... honestly, it's only my opinion, you know. When I play in high level in ATP, for me it is much easier to compete there. And
why?
When I play in challenger level, it is more difficult to compete. Today, for example, I played the match outside. I was missing every second ball, but those balls were from middle of the court, you know. So my mentality is to play top level. So when the ball is in the middle of the clock, I crack it 100%. Because if I play, and the guys who play challenger, they don't crack it. They just place the ball, slower speed, everything. So they don't take much risk. But I know that, I remember playing Nadal, I had to crack this ball. So it's in my head. So after the quarantine, I'm not practiced well. So that's why I'm missing now these balls. And coach is telling me, come on, please, just play like other guys. Just put the ball in. They will never pass you. But no, still, I'm cracking it, and I'm missing it, and I'm missing it. So what's the difference in the high level? The guys, they play game to win. You know, they are playing. They want to win each point because they know that they will not receive 3 points, and they know that they have to play better, and, you know, it's nice to watch. On the challengers, they just play to don't lose, to don't miss the ball, you know. They are breaking their balls, they are running. You see Popko, let's say he doesn't miss the ball, you know, but he don't hit. So for the challenger, he's a good player. But if you put him in the ATP, the guy who is playing faster, serving better, he will not be able to do anything. So this is the difference of level. So if we can make that in challengers, players feel the same way like in ATP, you know, they're going to go for it. Even when they have short ball, just crack the ball hell of it and then go 200 miles per hour the ball, you know, why not? Why you have to play easy ball or just in the corner?
I mean,
no?
Not everybody's as strong as you, though.
So, no, everybody, come on. We are watching, there are many guys stronger than me. So, but they don't do it, you know. And I think this we can change. How? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the question I have. How do you teach that? How do you teach that to somebody else?
If you take young guys, let's say there is Tseng, one guy, Tseng,
yeah.
Taiwan, he used to be number one in ATP.
Yeah.
He knows how to do it. He's losing matches, but when you watch how he plays, he steps into the short ball. Always he goes forward. I remember Agir Alessin.
Alessin.
I saw him when he was 15 years old.
Yeah.
In China, in Challenger, altitude 1,000 meters, so high, and he played tiebreak final set. And he actually was 15-4 in one game during the match. And he, when I was watching, I saw like Djokovic movements, you know. He didn't hesitate to do the correct things, you know. When ball was short, he was going for it. Even though he lost that game, he missed, but next one he broke, he won the match.
Yeah.
I told this guy, how he fit, he will be top 10. And look where he is now. It was when he was 15.
Right.
I saw the level of, and mentally, how he's prepared. So I think what happens, you have to build up a junior with a head like this. You cannot tell guys who are already 25 years old to change the mentality. You know, it is so difficult. You can make them like robots. You can make them play better. You can make them fitter. They will run. We had many top players like Vassalo Arguello, let's say. He was top 40. He played on clay, but then he was like a machine. He didn't miss one ball. He was running.
Right.
He was not talented. But probably to change it, I think we need good coaches, for example, to
start them young.
To tell the young players how what to do in the head, you know. So if you are teaching your player don't miss the ball, this is one thing. If you are teaching the player make the winner, this is another thing,
mm-hmm.
and step in. So it's completely different. I think it comes when you are 14 to 18, maybe this cup.
Yes.
You should know.
Yeah.
If you in the head, one guy is telling you, do this. Doesn't matter if you lose. Just listen to me. Do it. I think he will have a higher level.
I want you to coach Noah, please. I want you to
he's still young compared to me. He's so young. So.
Well, it's funny because you know he and I have had some long talks about things, you know, in over the last several weeks.
Too many
and
talks.
Like that's exactly the mentality. But it's also, as you said, it's so hard to teach a guy who has kind of gone through it for few years.
There are many guys who play only Challenger Tour, sometimes ATP, and they are below 100 or even 200 mm-hmm. in the ranking, and they play whole career there. So they're kind of used to it, you know, and they are afraid to play ATP Tour. They think that it's magic there.
Right.
But this is not the magic. They are exactly the same players. For me, it's much easier to play it, like much easier. I would be happy to compete against guys who are 50 or against the guys who are 150. It would be more difficult for me.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's tough, but yeah, this is the way. If you have new guys like this, of course, challenger level will change also.
People listening, take notes.
Before I let you go, your family, everybody healthy, everybody's
yes,
good. And what's
yeah,
what was it like for you over those 6 months to spend a little bit more time at home?
This was crazy, really. I mean, literally in my country, I was in Georgia.
Yeah.
It was shut down during four and a half months. I didn't do anything. Like
right.
I was at home, so it was difficult times. But you know, I had quite good rest.
Yeah.
But mentally it was difficult. For everyone, I think.
Sure.
The world is like this. We hope to recover now. We have vaccines everywhere. So maybe next year, end of the year or the summer, we'll be free from all these restrictions.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.